Life is so much more than a diagnosis. It's about sharing time with those you love, hanging with friends who lift you up, and experiencing all those moments that bring you joy. All hits, no skips. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you. So long live singing to the oldies, jamming out to something new, and everything in between.
The following is an exclusive presentation from Sports Radio 92.7. WFNZ.
The exclusive home of the Charlotte sports fan.
This is Instant Replay on Sports Radio 92.7 WFNZ, featuring the best of the best from today's conversations, observations, and ruminations, because great radio is still fresh the second time around. Earlier today on the Mac and Bone Show.
Let's do some college hoops talk. Not many better options, Bone, to talk college hoops with than the Hall of Fame college hoops writer from the Sporting News and from Fox Sports. He is Mike DeCourcy, and he joins us here on the Bodyworks Plus guest hotline. Mike, it is a beautiful time of year. I know you're happy. What's going on?
Oh, you know I'm happy? Where did you get that?
I thought you enjoyed the month of March. No, too stressful for you? Too much work? I don't know.
Someone the other day said, this is Christmas time for you. And I said, yeah, if I'm Santa Claus.
All right, well, deliver us some gifts, Santa. All right, deliver us some content gifts right now, then.
DeCourcy won, Mac nothing.
Well, let us be happy then, all right? Tell us some stuff here. We were talking about this earlier. Some UNC fans, and I believe they've taken this from Roy Williams back in the day, looking at this ACC tournament and saying, I don't know how much I care. But the one aspect is there is that shot of if they run the table in D.C. and win the ACC tournament of getting that final number one seed. How do you think that battle for that last one seed? We all conceded for weeks now, right? Purdue, Houston, UConn, one seeds. But that battle, it's basically Tennessee, Carolina, Arizona. Is that what you think?
Oh, Arizona's got no shot.
No shot, okay.
The other two face plant today. Okay, or tomorrow in Tennessee's case, then maybe. But, I mean, they would have to, like, commit crimes against the game of basketball that have never been conceived to get Arizona back in the picture after they lost. I honestly don't know this. There's got to be some stat person out there that could go and find this. But has a conference champion ever dropped games to the three bottom teams in their league? I can't imagine that's ever happened. Like, in the history of high major basketball, that they lost to SC, they lost to Oregon State, and they lost to who was the other one? I can't remember now, but whichever it was. I mean, it was just a total joke what they did at the bottom of the league. And then, of course, they win the league, and they're certainly going to be a two, and they're certainly going to be in the West. Nobody else wants the two in the West, but it's Tennessee versus Carolina, without a doubt. And Tennessee has the edge because the SEC provides more opportunities to get significant wins, which Tennessee swept down the stretch. They got Auburn, they got Kentucky on the road, they got Alabama. They really did a nice job. South Carolina on the road. So for Carolina, the problem is where are your Auburns and Alabamas? So they got Duke, and they did a fantastic job in that series, taking them both. But I think they're going to need a third, and preferably over Duke. They're going to need the conference championship, and it'd be way better for them if it's Duke they play in the final. And, of course, Clemson last night made it a little bit easier for that scenario to develop.
Mike, what do you think of the job Hubert Davis did from where the Heels were a year ago and not meeting the lofty expectations to where they are now as a viable national title contender? What do you think of Hubert here in year three and where he's got this program?
I think that they did a fantastic job this year. I thought they managed the portal as well as just about anybody. Harrison Ingram was just a magnificent addition. And to go ahead and take advantage of that, to get a guy who can shoot 40% from threes and who actually gets rebounds off of Armando Bacot. He's like the only guy in America that can do that. It's been a fantastic addition. Cormac Ryan was so good in that second Duke game. He seems to be starting to really get consistent with his touch. And, of course, they went into the freshman class to get Elliot Cadeau. They had to manage their roster, and they had to look at what wasn't working. And I think we all know what wasn't working. And it worked. The fact that they were willing to move on, move past the success they had in 22 and what led to last year not being spectacular, it opened up everything. R.J. Davis went from really struggling a year ago to a first-team All-American for Sporting News. They made the difficult choices, or however what the actual process was inside the program, we don't know. But the difficult things happened, and they produced great results.
They really did. It's amazing to know kind of what was going on. I guess we don't know the full story, what was going on behind the scenes, but just kind of know that RJ and Caleb Love last year, it seemed like such a rough mix. And then to see them both win their conference player of the year awards it really worked out for both parties. We're talking with Mike DeCourcy, Sporting News, SportingNews.com, Fox
Santa
Sports.
Claus.
Santa Claus, he's bringing you the college football presents that he can't enjoy himself.
I gotta
he's
tell bringing you, if Mike's bringing brackets down the chimney, that's a pretty good thing to have.
Here's the thing though, Santa Claus, how many dang bids can you bring the ACC? I'm a little worried about how low this number might be. What do you think the ACC bid situation looks like?
Well, as of now, it's 5, and the Wake-Pitt game will be very important to determining what happens. I don't think Wake can advance without that. Pitt certainly needs it to have any chance. So I wouldn't call it a true elimination game, but it's pretty close. The winner of that has a chance. The loser of that has no chance. So it's pretty close to a true elimination game. There's something similar in the Big East today as well with Seton Hall and St. John's. Where St. John's plays the part of Pitt and Seton Hall plays the part of Wake in terms of which team is at a better advantage.
Yeah.
But St. John's is just in a better position than Pitt is. But you look at them, Clemson will get in, certainly, even though they had the problem last night. They'll get in, but they cost themselves dearly in seeding and placement and all of that. And then you have Duke and Carolina, and Duke needs a good performance here to hold on to their 3 on my bracket. They need to do well here. They don't have to win it, but they have to do well. And then Carolina, we know what they're fighting for. They have a chance at a 1. It won't be the worst thing. You know, a lot of people look at it. It wouldn't be the worst thing for them to get a 2. But the problem is, if they get a 2, it's between, you know, geographically, they probably end up going to the East.
Yeah.
And that's, There is some math that suggests that Detroit might be closer, and they might end up there. And if the committee goes straight math, then that would be there. But it's no fun to play Purdue either. That's why the 1 seed would be so awesome, because to go west, the reality is that there are very few good Western teams this year. Gonzaga, St. Mary's had a great year. Gonzaga did not. The Pac-12 had a really poor year. So what happens is that everybody's in the West is somebody that doesn't want to be there, that would rather be closer to home. And you end up with, if you could get that 1, your bracket is filled with like the last team on the line. They'll have to make some moves to balance it out a little bit, but for the most part, you'll get the weakest region. And obviously Arizona's no easy team. And the added, If it is Carolina out there, that added drama, if it were 1-2 in the final, would really be something.
Yes.
But I do think there's great incentive to try to avoid UConn and or Purdue. Houston wouldn't bother me that much. I love their team. I love how hard they play. They play better defense than just about anybody, but I don't think they're built for winning it. So I think they're the team of the 3, maybe not the most vulnerable, but the one that you would most feel comfortable playing.
Yeah. Mike, when we look at Duke in the NCAA tournament, what are the biggest keys, the biggest factors for the Blue Devils to make a deep run?
Well, I think, first of all, they have to know exactly what they want to do with their offense. Where do they want the buckets to come from? I don't think they do a poor job. Don't get me wrong. I think they do a really nice job. But in the Carolina game, they didn't have a good feel for that. They didn't know exactly where were the gaps, where were the possible weaknesses in the Carolina defense. They couldn't figure out a formula there. I think they've had a really great offensive year, and they've got a lot of weapons. I think Kyle Filipowski is one of the tougher matchups there is. And the backcourt play has been terrific. I think McCain is one of my favorite players to watch. He seems to enjoy playing so much. But they have to find that formula relative to who they play against. And it's going to be a little different, no matter, you know, depending on how you're guarded, where the opportunities are. When you've got as many different players who can score as they do, then it's not always a matter of, okay, we want to play through this player because this is how we play best. It's okay, where can we find the weakness in this particular team's defense?
Hey, Mike, I completely agree with what you're saying about Carolina wanting to avoid UConn. Like, I know it's late. Months have gone by, but that game early in the season, that's a team I don't want the Heels seeing. But I want to ask you about UConn in this way. Is UConn so good, in your opinion, that it is like are they like, I hear people in the media on some of these talking head shows throwing out, would you take UConn or the field? Are they that good? Like, they're not that good, are they?
They're not that good.
Okay.
No. I mean, that's like 91 Vegas or 96 Kentucky. Yeah. And this is a great team. Don't get me wrong. They're having a fabulous year. But we're 3 weeks away from them going out to Creighton and getting run off the floor by 20. So it's doable. I mean, you didn't see that. Like, nobody ran Vegas off the floor by 20. It was like, Bobby Hurley had to hit the shot of a lifetime. Yeah. Not that he wasn't a great player, but that shot, you know, all the courage that was in that shot, he had to make it. And they still had to score more because that only brought it from 5-2. It's not like that, but they're great. And if I were going into this tournament, they are the team that I would least want to play. The one place I would love to play them would be in the final on Monday night in Arizona. I'll take that deal. Yeah. But any other time, I'd rather see anybody else in the field.
Mike, this is not a team we often will ask you about as we're approaching March Madness here. But the South Carolina Gamecocks, what are the great surprises in the sport this season? What do you think of the job Lamont Paris did this year and their outlook as we go forward and start analyzing these teams in the Big Dance?
Yeah, offensively, that's probably going to get them at some point in March. The job is to try to delay that as long as possible. They don't have the kind of offense that usually goes deep into March. One of the things that in sports they always say defense wins championships, and my corollary to that is, but not in college hoops. You got to be able to get big stops in college hoops, but offense is most important. The only defensive championship in the last 30 years was UConn in 14. Everybody else, it's offense first, and they may have great defenses. Lots of them do. But if you can't score, if you can't manufacture baskets against teams that are both well-prepared and obviously capable defensively, if you can't do that, you can't keep going. That's the biggest thing, and that's where probably South Carolina falls short. But I think Lamont has done an amazing job at South Carolina. Nobody thought anything about this team coming into the year. And once they were established as being good, as being someone you had to pay attention to, and teams started to really gear up and prepare for those. I mean, everybody prepares, but you know how it is. You go into a walkthrough and you're looking at a team that's 8-13, and like, you do what you do, and then you go out and you win, but you're not jazzed for that game. But once teams started looking at South Carolina as a game that would be a great win to have, it didn't knock South Carolina back at all. I mean, they still went down through February, and they lost games, but to really good teams.
All right, Mike, great talking to you. We always appreciate it. Mikey Kloss delivered, man. He delivered the content we want during the month of March.
By the way, for bracketology, this is the guy you go to, right? This is my doctor right here.
Not the guy that we're forced to see on TV 700 times a night.
This is the guy here.
All right, Mike, you're the man. At TSN Mike on Twitter, Sporting News, FoxSports.com. Thank you, Mike.
Thanks, guys.
Listen to Mac and Bone every weekday morning from 6 to 10. Instant replay continues with more in a moment. Only on Sports Radio 92.7 WFNZ.
The exclusive home of the Charlotte sports fan.
McDonald's is not new to chicken. So maybe stop questioning their chicken cred and get your hands on the McCrispy. Juicy fried chicken, buttery bun, unmatched pickle to chicken ratio. Yeah, they know what they're doing. In fact, we can honestly say they're not new to chicken. They're true to chicken. The McCrispy. Only at McDonald's. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
Whether it's audiobooks or all-time greatest hits, long live listening to your favorites. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you.
You're listening to Instant Replay on Sports Radio 92.7 WFNZ, because great radio the second time around is always twice as nice. This afternoon on the Wes and Walker Show.
North Carolina up 56-39 on Florida State with just over 15 minutes left to go. Elliott Cadeau running the floor, finishing with the left hand. But Florida State just answered right there. So now 56-41 as it stands right now. We'll keep you updated. We also have the Tournament Central updates at the end of each segment. Brought to you by Fred Caldwell Chevrolet. Oh! I've picked it up. I'm sorry. I have to compliment myself every time. What you got, Fitty?
All right. So we got a trade within the involving an NFC South team. The Cardinals are sending wide receiver Rondale Moore to Atlanta in exchange for quarterback Desmond Ridder.
Oh, I like that for Atlanta a lot.
Dude, Atlanta went out. They signed a quarterback, and they're doing what you're supposed to do when you got a good quarterback. Give him plethora of weapons. Dude, they're going to be the most fun team maybe in the entire NFC to watch offensively.
I don't want to like what Atlanta is doing as much as they are, but I do. I don't want to be this way. I don't want to. But Kirk Cousins going that Carolina doing something well. I love it. I don't want it to be like this, but going after Rondale Moore, who is tiny, but when he gets the football in his hands, he's so explosive, and you don't have to rely on him to be at the top of the wide receiver chart. Like, you were relying on him to be a little bit with Arizona.
Yeah.
Hollywood Brown was still that guy after they had a lot of weapons to work with at first, and then A.J. Green gets old after trading for him. Hollywood Brown is an interesting NFL player to evaluate. Some people believe in him. Some of them don't. I really like what Moore can do with that Falcons team, and so we'll see what Atlanta does. We'll keep you updated on anything happening in free agency and also within the ACC tournament. I have a Carolina Panthers questionnaire for everybody to fill out, if you will. So you can text in with some of your answers on the FanDuel text line, 704-570-9610, 704-570-9610. I just want to know what your favorite signing of free agency is so far. Most people would go with the Diontae Johnson trade, I think. So let's leave that one out of it, unless you have something that's even better. Maybe Robert Hunt is the name that you want to roll with, despite getting paid $20 million per year. What's your favorite move? 704-570-9610. I think for me, it would clearly be Diontae Johnson for me if I had that allowed. I think everybody understands that. I just think it's a good piece of business. But the favorite signing so far, just because of process, Fitty, I think it's Josie Jewell, and it's not because I love the player. It's not because of that. The reason I like it, I think it shows the ability to adapt when a couple of curveballs are thrown at you, and that's what I like. So we can go with the Mike Lombardi take of not having a plan or whatever. I actually think they navigated the linebacker position pretty well if you weren't able to land your top options, which that happened twice. Okay, you can't bring back Frankie Louvu, even if it wasn't because you shortchanged him. That's not what happened, which makes me feel a little more at ease. They valued him, maybe didn't make him a priority at the very beginning, but it looks like Frankie Louvu wanted to play in a system that would utilize his skill set a little more, which is rushing the passer. And he is one of the best pass rushing linebackers in all of football. So if he goes to Washington and he thinks that's going to happen a lot more, cool. I don't love it, but cool. Now you have to shift gears. Now you go after Patrick Queen. Queen was referenced to the Panthers for quite some time. He was going to Charlotte or he was going to Pittsburgh, had to figure it out, eventually agrees on a pretty big deal. 3 years, $41 million, I believe is what it was. And so now you have to shift again. So what happens then? You go after Josie Jewell, who had success in an Ojero Averro system with Denver a couple of years ago, and is a good enough linebacker that deserves to be out there on the field. Like, you need some depth. That's still a position that you might draft. Peyton Wilson is a popular name to bring up now that you have 2 second-round picks. It's not because I love the player. It's because I like him. I think he's going to be serviceable, a worthwhile starter. And I think it shows that this process was pretty damn good. You had to shift a couple of times, and I think they landed a pretty good player despite not having the plan go the way they wanted to the first couple times.
And look, they had to respond after seeing, you know, Luvu leave. You trade away Burns. You had to go get an adequate linebacker to play here next year to be alongside Shaq Thompson as he, you know, rehabs from injury. And you go get a guy that's thrived under this coordinator that you have here in Carolina. It was a savvy move, and I think that's what we've seen this front office pull off outside of maybe the value that you got when you traded away Burns. It feels like every move is just savvy. It fits. They overpaid to get, you know, Hunt here, but you know, that was always maybe going to be the case to get an offensive lineman of his caliber to go to a 2-win football team. But that was going to be my answer too, because you know, you just look at his history, his track record, the way he loved playing under Jair Rivera, the way he fits in this scheme. He's going to be poised to have a big-time season for Carolina and maybe make you forget that Frankie Luvu is no longer here.
Most people are going with Robert Hunt still. They don't care about $20 million per year. I get it. Dire need. Pass protection in the middle because you drafted a small quarterback at number one overall. $20 million a year? Okay, we'll sign up for that because we have the resources to, and we desperately need it. One person writes in Dane Jackson, and so that's interesting. Dane Jackson, for me, according to a 980 number, as a Bills fan, he's a dog, good in coverage, and a very good tackler. So if you put Dane Jackson in coverage alongside J.C. Horn, and at the deal he came in on, I believe it's like $7 million a year. Yeah. We'll see if it's up to 14 or if it actually really is $7 million a year. But the money, it indicates that he's going to be a starter rather than just a depth piece. So we'll see how it all unfolds. But I like that signing, too. Let's talk more about Robert Hunt, Fitty, because I think I understand it. I think if you're a Carolina Panther fan or you've watched this team for any amount of time in the past year, maybe 2 years, you could understand why they would allocate a ton of resources to going and signing the guard from Miami, who had a good season last year blocking for Tua. Here's Mina Kimes. Are you ready? Should I do it? Mina Kimes podcast featuring Lenny. Mina was going over all the grades that she had for a bunch of the signings that took place over the last couple of days. And here's what Mina had to say about the Robert Hunt signing.
The Carolina Panthers, this was perhaps the most shocking deal. This was the offensive line equivalent of Christian Kirk. Robert Hunt, 5 years, $100 million, 63 guaranteed. Boom. The Panthers, should be noted, also signed Damian Lewis, not the Billions actor, but the Seahawks, a guard, to a 4-year, $53 million deal, signifying a pretty obvious and deliberate strategy. They are wiping the slate clean with this offensive line, at least on the interior. They are investing heavily in it, following the New Orleans model of trying to protect their mini quarterback up front. I like that side of it. I do. But this is a lot of money for a player who was good, but I did not. This is pretty stunning to me, especially, like, I don't know, coming out of Miami. They're probably smarter than people than me. They're definitely smart. People are smarter than me and can evaluate these guys in pass pro. But like, that's such a hard. It's been so hard because Tua gets rid of the ball so quickly for me to get a sense of how good at pass protection some of these players are.
Deliberate strategy. You know what else? You know what other term you can use there? Plan. Mike Lombardi, I hope you were listening. They have one. Even if it's a lot of money to pay for somebody that maybe isn't a top 5 guard in the NFL, he's still good enough to warrant bringing in here to Carolina. And I'm cool on the money just because I was desperate too, right? This goes along the lines of beggars can't be choosers. And so I will beg for the services of Robert Hunt to block Bryce Young for Bryce Young. Absolutely. So if we continue on that line, I want to take note of the timing of Miami's offense. That was something we talked about quite a bit when the Panthers faced the Dolphins earlier this year. It was just how quickly Tua gets that football out of his hands with speedsters on the outside. So let's go to some more of that. We also have Dan Pizzuta, joining the Mina Kimes podcast, featuring Lenny. And he shared some of the same thoughts that, you know what, that Miami offensive line, when you start to take a deeper look at it, they weren't great in pass protection.
I think when you look at pass block win rate, which is, you know, up to 2.5 seconds, but if the ball is out within 2.5 seconds, it's kind of, it's null.
Yes.
So when you look at what they actually track, Miami did not come out as a good pass blocking team last year. It's going to be good for the run game because these guys are two good run blockers. Hunt is very good run blocking, especially with what we saw in Miami last year. Lewis has gotten better, I think, every year. So I'm not totally sure what Carolina wants to do. If they want to maybe be take a little bit off Bryce Young as he develops, then that's okay.
Clearly, like,
this is not
right?
But this is not like the Saints coming in and bringing some great pass protecting guards for Drew Brees. Yeah. I don't think that's the type of real shift that they're going for. If it is, like, that's a benefit, but that's not what these two players have been to this point.
So yeah, what Dan is telling you is that they didn't go out and sign Hall of Fame caliber Pro Bowl level player Jari Evans to block for Drew Brees via Bryce Young. But a couple of things that I think are important to note: good at run blocking. What has Dave Canales told you a million different times? He wants to be stubborn in the run game. And it's not like Tampa had a great run blocking offensive line, so he wants to go get his guys that are better at run blocking. So now, okay, Robert Hunt is very good at that. Damian Lewis is a better run blocking offensive lineman. Icky can run block. Pass protection, that's a real problem, and that's why they pay you the big bucks at left tackle. But at least he can run block. And Taylor Moton, who is good at run blocking, at least average, even if he's better in pass pro, if that's one of your weaker run blockers, that ends up being a damn good offensive line in that facet. But then we go to pass protection. They both mentioned the quick game. It's really hard to evaluate what an offensive line can do in pass pro when you get that football out so quickly. It helps the quarterback, but it also helps the offensive line. And so if Robert Hunt is already used to this, then you bring him in, yes, paying him a lot of money, but you're not putting him in an environment that he's not used to. What is different is that you don't have Tyreek Hill and Jaylen Waddle on the outside. No other team has that, not one. So what's different about the Miami quick game compared to other quick games, it's the fact that they can still throw the ball downfield because Tyreek gets 20 yards downfield in the blink of an eye. And it's the same with Jaylen Waddle, where most of the time, if you're getting that football out in under 3 seconds, it's slants, it's maybe 15 yards past the line of scrimmage and then anticipating that cut and letting the ball loose. That's the big difference. But as far as the timing goes, hey, can you hold up in 3 seconds? You can. Cool. Block for Bryce Young. And I think that was the idea in what they were thinking. I know Fitty's laughing for a reason. But that's the idea for pass protection, and that matters to me. Did you have any takeaways from what Mina and Dan were talking about on their podcast?
I think the thing is that are these two offensive linemen, or when you look at specifically with Robert Hunt, is he better than what Carolina had on the interior last year? That answer is a definitive yes. So today, at this moment, don't care that they maybe overpaid and overvalued him to get him here, because you're building Bryce Young up and you're giving him a chance. Also, you know, you look at, well, it's hard to evaluate how they are in pass protection because they get the ball out so quickly. What has Dave Canales talked about? 2.8 seconds. He wants that ball out of Bryce Young's hands. It's not like we're asking them to pass block for 4 to 5 seconds. It's going to be similar. It's not going to be as explosive as it was in Miami because Carolina doesn't have the weapons that, you know, Tua had with Tyreek and Waddle and all those dudes. But if this offense is playing the way that it's designed to be executed, the ball is going to be out of his hands in a very timely manner. Therefore, if they are, you know, mediocre at best in pass pro, you're hiding that deficiency. And so I think this is just a move that you wanted to see Carolina make because you've got to protect him. And he's proven that he can protect a small quarterback, and you should expect that to continue now that he's in Carolina.
You know what I appreciate about that, though? It's the fact that they had legitimate reasons as to why they are a little hesitant to give this a good grade with those signings, but they also acknowledge a very clear plan and strategy that Carolina is rolling with. And you might disagree with the plan, totally understand that. But to say that they don't have one, such as Lombardi suggested, that just doesn't make any sense to me. And it's a good one in the sense of it's the right idea. I don't know if the players are going to be able to carry that out, but it's the right idea to go protect your small number one overall pick at quarterback. That's what I like about this, even if you have to overpay, because think about the alternative. If they don't land a couple of the top guards on the market, even in what is considered to be a pretty weak guard market in free agency, if you don't land those top guys, and then you try to tell your fan base, you were going to roll with Austin Corbett after injury and Brady Christensen because we think these guys coming back from injury are going to be good enough. Nah, man, fan base ain't going to accept that. Now what you can say is, yeah, we paid top dollar, but we had money and we used it the right way. And that message is going to be a lot more well received than the other one telling you, good luck with Corbett, Christensen, and Bozeman again.
I'm about to hit you with the reference, and hopefully you pick it up on it. There's no denying that this front office has a plan, where in years past, they didn't even have a plot.
I don't know. I'm mad because I feel like I know it, but I don't. I can't. I'm sorry, Flound. What is it? Oh, what is it? What is it?
Friends. Remember when they have the power outage and it's Phoebe, Monica, and Rachel, and they're all sitting in Monica's apartment, and Phoebe's on the ground, and Monica goes, I don't have a plan. And then Phoebe goes, I don't have a plot.
Good line from Phoebe, who is usually the dumb one along with Joey, but also a pretty smart joke. That apartment is one of the greatest shelters, if we want to roll with apartment rooms of all time in TV history.
It's either that one or Sheldon Cooper's in The Big Bang Theory.
No, that one. I don't. There's like draft. There's only one place to sit in that whole sitcom.
How I Met Your Mother.
Yeah, that's good. That show sucks.
How I Met Your Mother does not suck.
That show's terrible.
You can have a problem with the finale, but the show itself is pretty great. I like that apartment a lot more than I do what you just brought up with, what was the other one that you had? It was Big
Sheldon
Bang Theory.
Sheldon Cooper from The Big Bang Theory.
Yeah, I mean, Sheldon he's set up camp in the only place that doesn't have a draft and has the right amount of light. Like, nowhere else is okay to sit.
That's right, baby.
I would tell you that Hey Arnold's room is the best room of all time in TV
history.
It
really bothers me how much you, still at 31 years old, love, reference, and respect Hey Arnold.
If you can reference High School Musical every third week, I can talk about Hey Arnold as much as I want to.
You can hear Wes and Walker live and local every weekday afternoon from noon to 3. Sit tight and stay locked because Instant Replay continues next, only on Sports Radio 92.7 WFNZ.
The exclusive home of the Charlotte sports fan.
McDonald's is not new to chicken, so maybe stop questioning their chicken cred and get your hands on the McCrispy. Juicy fried chicken, buttery bun, unmatched pickle to chicken ratio. Yeah, they know what they're doing. In fact, we can honestly say they're not new to chicken. They're true to chicken. The McCrispy. Only at McDonald's. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
Whether it's audiobooks or all-time greatest hits, long live listening to your favorites. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you.
You're listening to Instant Replay on Sports Radio 92.7 WFNZ. Because great radio the second time around is always twice as nice. Earlier this afternoon on the Kyle Bailey Show.
Let's talk a little ACC tournament. Let's head up to D.C., where I assume he's still at Capital One Arena or down the street getting food somewhere in our nation's capital. From The Athletic, he covers Carolina, Duke, and the ACC. The great and wonderful Brendan Marks back with us on the Body Works Plus guest hotline. Brendan, we appreciate the time. How's D.C. treating you?
Absolutely. You know, I am enjoying the 70-degree weather and the fact that we finally had an interesting game.
Oh, we sure did. And I'm going to get to Duke and Carolina here in just a second, but Wake just fell to Pitt in the quarterfinals. And, you know, we all know in this conversation what Wake did or maybe didn't do down the stretch. And it seems that they're probably NIT bound at best. What do you think of the way they ended the season and the likelihood they miss out on the NCAA tournament?
Yeah, you know, it's really tough. And, you know, look, you go back to that game, you get the win that you needed against Duke at home, and to lose so many games thereafter, three straight afterwards. Obviously, we're able to beat Clemson over the weekend, but realistically, Wake Forest had to win today. You know that coming into the game, and to completely no-show like the Demon Deacons did in the first half of the game today is just really disappointing. You know, this is now the second time. You think back 2 years ago when Steve Forbes had Alondis Williams, the ACC Player of the Year, had a future first-round pick, and Jake LaRavia, and the same situation played out. Wake Forest just needed to win one game in the ACC tournament to feel comfortable about its chances. That year, lost to Boston College and ended up missing the field. So this is now two times in three seasons this has happened. It's a painful way for the Deacons to go out.
It really was. You think Steve Forbes is safe for another year?
Absolutely. No, I think, you know, you look at what he's been able to do in the transfer portal. And also, let's not forget the situation that he arrived into. He was the only high major coach hired during the pandemic in 2020 during that cycle. So I still think he's done a really nice job in terms of getting talent. The problem is Wake Forest didn't have a single bench point today. He has to continue building the depth of the program, and unfortunately that isn't something you can solely achieve through the transfer portal. He's got some interesting recruits coming in, but the rebuild continues. I think Steve Forbes is close, but he's not quite there.
All right. We had a game earlier today. Carolina just wiped the floor with Florida State. Now, to be fair to the Seminoles, they were competitive for about the first 12 to 15 minutes of that game. But Carolina took over from there, and I was just incredibly impressed with the way Hubert had that team ready to go. They were fighting for loose balls. I mean, I'll give the floor to you, but, I mean, how impressive a performance was that by the ACC regular season champs?
Yeah, I was not shocked because we've seen this team play like this before, but I would argue this is the most intense North Carolina has looked all season. I mean, even compared to the Duke game on Saturday, like, the Tar Heels came out with something to prove, and the guys said afterwards, they said we were desperate, but I totally agree with you. You first 10 minutes of the game, relatively competitive. I look down, I look back up. UNC's on a 20-4 run. The game is over. I mean, Hubert Davis was inserting his reserves with 5-8 minutes left in the second half, and they were extending the lead from there. So just a total team performance. And look, like, the way North Carolina played today, that looks a lot like a one seed in the NCAA tournament to me. Obviously, it'll depend on what happens with Arizona, what happens with Tennessee, elsewhere in the country. But if North Carolina plays like this for two more days, it's going to be really hard for the committee not to give them a one.
I'm with you on that. I'm assuming you like them against Pitt tomorrow then.
I do. You know, it's going to be, you know, kudos to Pitt, first of all. You know, started 1-5 in the ACC, completely turned around their season. This is only the second time that Pitt has even played in the ACC semifinal. So the fact that the Panthers have made this sort of in-season growth is pretty remarkable. Ish Leggett, who is the ACC Sixth Man of the Year, was insane today.
Yeah.
One of his teammates said he looked like prime Kyrie. He had 30 points. So, you know, credit to Pitt. But again, the way North Carolina looked today, I don't know that there's any team in the ACC that can hang with them.
No, we got Brendan Marks with us, The Athletic, live from D.C. at the ACC tournament. He's with us on the Body Works Plus guest hotline. Let's go back to last night. NC State, it was a tight game at the half, but what a second half from Kevin Keats's crew. And needs to be pointed out that they had DJ Horn this time, and he seemed to make a big difference.
Absolutely. And, you know, listen, I think the fact that he was able to get DJ Horn, that Kevin Keats was, able to get him one more day of rest against Louisville the first day of this tournament, I think was huge, you know, because that was a true game-time decision. Obviously, DJ came off the bench yesterday, and NC State's walking into the arena right now, going right past me. So they're walking in. They're ready to go. But listen, like, the Wolfpack do not want to stop going, and they just keep saying, you know, one more, one more. And, you know, there's a great tweet from, you know, a friend of mine, friend of yours, Luke DeCock, last night that Wolfies are celebrating in the hallway. They go, two more. And someone walks over to Kevin Keats and says, you think they know it's three? And he said, you know, very importantly, they just know that it's one at a time, one more. So it'll be interesting to see. You know, Duke is well-rested tonight, but NC State is playing with some fire. DJ Horn looked good. I think this game is going to be closer than people expect it to be.
All right, I'm asking the same question about a different coach, but you know how NC State fans are about this time of year and how they feel about their head coach right now. He's won two tournament games for the first time in his tenure there, but a lot of NC State fans as recently as a couple of days ago were just ready to start over, but it doesn't sound like the administration feels that way. What are you hearing?
Yeah, you know, I think that the fan ire has been there for a couple of months now, you know, especially in the Triangle where I'm based out of, and I'm sure, you know, across the entire state. And increasingly in the last couple of weeks, it sounds like the administration, the temperament of the administration, was starting to overlap more with some of the fan frustration. But I will say, I think that, you know, we'll see what happens tonight. Obviously, that can change things. But I think Kevin Keats has earned himself another season, at least in the eyes of the NC State administration, based on what he's done this week. His team has come out. They've performed. They've played well. They've done what they needed to do. They haven't been at full strength. And they just keep adjusting and finding ways to win here. So, again, if they absolutely lay an egg against Duke tonight, could that change? It could. But the appetite for Kevin Keats to be removed as NC State's head coach has never been as strong with the administration as it has been with the fan base. And, you know, again, if they were able to beat Duke tonight, I don't see there's any way that Kevin Keats wouldn't be back next year.
Well, you kind of alluded to it there a second ago, but my concern about NC State, and I think most anybody who knows this tournament is, they're on three games in 3 days. Duke's going to have fresh legs. Do you think that's what decides this game, or does NC State have enough adrenaline to find a way to play for 40 minutes?
Well, it could. And listen, like, Duke has been in lockdown mode, you know? A couple of teams who have been up here in D.C. have done, you know, separate media sessions with reporters in their hotel or before games or things, and Duke hasn't done any of that. You know, they have very clearly said, we are in lockdown mode. They are still very frustrated about what happened in Durham on Saturday night. That loss has stuck with the Blue Devils, and I'm expecting them to come out motivated. Question is, did they come out motivated but a little bit rusty? Obviously, that's NC State's hope. But, you know, I think the lineup here, we can talk about gambling now, right? I think the lineup here is... I think the line is 10.5 here. I definitely think it'll be closer than that, even if Duke is able to actually pull this out.
Okay, I'm glad you said what you said about what happened in Durham last weekend. And, like, what's at stake here? And it seems like a silly question because, you know, you can do a lot in a conference tournament to help your odds depending upon who you are. But Duke and Carolina are both in. Carolina swept Duke, and I think most people at this point feel like they are, in fact, the better team. But let's say we get Carolina-Duke in the ACC tournament title game. What's on the line there? Is it just all about pride and, you know, avoiding another sweep or avoiding a three-game sweep? What are we looking at?
You know, pride is a thing, but I look at it from two angles. Number one, it is really, really hard to beat a team three times in a season. It is incredibly difficult to do that. And so that in and of itself, you think, okay, well, maybe Duke has it. However, of course, there's a but. I think that this is a bad matchup, as we have now seen twice, for Duke against North Carolina. Because, quite honestly, when we've been talking about Duke, we've been talking about their growth all season. We've talked about Jared McCain. We've talked about getting Kyle Filipowski in the best point. The same question that I had about Duke back in the preseason, about what they were going to do at center, how they were going to compensate for not bringing in a big out of the portal. Obviously, they flirted with a couple of guys, didn't actually bring any of them in. That, to me, still remains the greatest question with Duke. And I think the fact that our UNC has Armando Bacot and the way that North Carolina can play off of them has continued to give the Blue Devils problems. And when Duke has lost games this season, it has been to teams that have bigs like that. You know, Bay Dongo at Georgia Tech back in December when these teams first played, it was Duke's second straight loss after they lost at Arkansas. He dominated Kyle Filipowski in that game. So I think it's just a bad matchup for Duke with these respective roster constructions. But again, like you say, pride's a powerful motivator, and especially if we get around three. I think that's what everybody in D.C. is rooting for.
All right, last thing. Earl Grant, Quentin Post, and Boston College, they found a little something lately, and they knocked off Miami. They beat Clemson last night. Tonight in the late game, they get Tony Bennett and UVA, and I believe that UVA is the better team, but we all know stylistically, as long as Boston College doesn't flop here, they may have a chance late to pull the upset. Do you think it's possible, or are you riding with Tony Bennett's crew?
Not only do I think it's possible, I think you could make an argument that it's probable. If you wanted to tell me that Boston College is the favorite going into tonight, I would believe you. Quentin Post has been absolutely feasting while he's been in D.C. The Cavaliers have, you know, obviously they have the resume. They're going to probably be in the tournament. But, you know, this is a game that Virginia realistically still needs to win. The Cavaliers are talking about being in Dayton, talking about having them as one of the final four teams into the field. And listen, they have not been able to figure out how to consistently generate offense all season. Quentin Post is one of the best defenders in the league. I would not at all be surprised if Boston College pulls the quote-unquote upset tonight. I believe, you have to fact-check me here, I believe that 2006 was the last time that Boston College played on a Friday night in the ACC tournament. I think it would be a testament to what Earl Grant has done up at Boston College if they're able to get back there.
Great stuff as always, brother. Enjoy your time up there. We'll see you soon.
I appreciate you, and I'll see you soon in Charlotte in person.
You tuned into Instant Replay. When the audio was so good, it has to be heard again. Only on Sports Radio 92.7 WFNZ.
The exclusive home of the Charlotte sports fan.